Well, hello there, HW here, and thank you so much for listening to the Tone Junkie Podcast, episode 14. I'm sitting on my porch in a rocking chair. It's a beautiful, balmy is the right word. What does that mean? I think it's a little bit humid outside. I think that means balmy. It's a good morning out here. And as I look at my Apple Watch, which is great, by the way, if you're not getting into wearables, I really highly suggest it. It's Wednesday the 1st. I'm recording this the day I'm going to put it out, and it's 70 degrees outside. I'm on my porch in a rocking chair, like I said. It's really beautiful, the South, you know? I'm not a guy from the South, but I moved to the South, and there are these moments where I really understand the South. I'll tell you the first one. The first one was at a bachelor party I went to one time in Georgia, and it was in... oh gosh, what's the town in Georgia where they have the motorcycle rally? I can't remember. But anyway, we went during Oktoberfest, and it was great. It was a big kind of party outside. A lot of merrymaking, let's call it. But we go, and that night, a couple nights there, that we were there for a wedding, I sat out on this porch in Georgia, sort of with all this wilderness, all this, these trees behind me, and the crickets are deafening. They're just loud. And I sat there, and I'm not a huge... I have sort of an addictive personality, which you might be able to tell from the number of guitars I own and things, and my infatuation with the Kemper and Sur guitars, and the fact that we've made, it's going on like 1,300 or 1,400 profiles right now. It'll break a Kemper. You can't even hold all the Tone Junkie stuff on a Kemper. And quickly, I have my sights set on the Rig Exchange. I'm doing the math going, okay, at this rate, when will the Tone Junkie everything pack overtake the amount of available rigs in the Rig Exchange? And the answer to that is, I mean, just a few years, actually, which is really exciting. Anyway, okay, addictive personality. But I've never really gotten into alcohol or beer too much. I've never enjoyed smoking. They're just sort of tastes I've never really acquired. I know that with drinking beer, especially people who get into beer, their tastes tend to get more bitter. So they tend to like their beer to be more hoppy over time. And I'm a person who actually really does not enjoy hoppy beer, and I've been told it's because I don't commit. If I just committed and kind of regularly drank more Guinness or something, you know, a beer that is less hoppy and more malty, that over time I'll develop more of a hoppy flavor, and I'll crave those more hoppy beers. I'll get into IPAs, but right now IPAs they're terrible to me. I can't stand them. But anyway, so, you know, I'm going to file that under golf, something I appreciate other people enjoy, but I'm probably not going to commit the funds or the time to building up my palate to enjoying a nice IPA. Why am I going down this trail of what's good beer or not? Because on this porch in Georgia, I sat down in a rocking chair and someone gave me a cigar, and I've enjoyed cigars a few times in my life, but again, they're not my favorite. They're fine. And they gave me some, what's it called? That hot whiskey, you know, the Fireball whiskey. You ever had it? It tastes like whiskey and hot tamales. The candy had a baby, and it's this hot whiskey. It's called Fireball. But as I drank some of this Fireball, and enjoyed some of the cigar, in the hot, humid heat outside, with the deafening crickets and the sort of the June bugs flying around, it all just made sense in a way. I don't know if it's a humidity thing, but it all just was delicious. And so I'm not advocating, you know, drunkardness or anything like this. I'm just saying at certain moments, some things just all come together. And there's something about the humidity, something about the sort of wet air that makes sitting on a porch in a rocking chair and just looking at the trees, it's a really zen-like experience. And I can't think of today a better day, a better way to start the Tone Junkie Podcast. So today we're going to talk about two things. We're going to be talking about the two types of guitar sounds. There's only two types of guitar sounds. I'm going to tell you what I think they are. And why I kind of wish I had just one guitar. I know, how could someone wish they had one guitar? That's stupid. Put them all on reverb, you'll have one guitar. Well, I'm going to tell you why I think it's better to have one guitar. And why, even though if you follow the channel and you you see a lot of my content personally, if you keep up with the happenings, you know that I own several guitars, and I even sometimes bought, like, I recently bought this Sur guitar, and before I even showed up at my house, I was convinced I didn't want it anymore. Luckily, I knew it was going to be awesome. I knew it was a great guitar. I knew it was fabulous. I knew it was going to become someone's number one guitar that they write home about. I just knew for me, I was going to continue to pick up my two JM Pros. And even though this great Sur Classic T with a trem that we've never seen before, we've never seen a trem on there, with two Thornbuckers, with the roasted maple neck, I knew this was going to become someone's number one, and instantly all these people were messaging me wanting it. Luckily, the Suze got it, so it's not far. I can still play it when I'd like to, but it's now the Suze's number one guitar. He sold the Alt-T Pro, and this Classic T replaced it. This Classic T is pretty much an Alt-T Pro. It's just not hollow. Same pickups, and it has a trem on it, and a roasted maple neck. But other than that, it's pretty much an Alt-T Pro kind of thing. Where was I again? I can't remember. I'm still kind of before my morning coffee, and, yeah, I'm going to talk about one guitar. Why I envy people who have one guitar, and why, even though I have several, I kind of feel like I have one. I kind of feel like my eight guitars are actually one guitar. I'm going to get more into that. All that coming up now on the Tone Junkie Podcast. There really are only two types of guitar sounds. Still on the porch, by the way. There really are only two types of guitar sounds. Good and bad. Rock and lame. Suck and not suck. No. Although you could categorize maybe any tone that way. I think there's only two types of guitar tones that you've ever really heard. And this kind of goes back to the discussion about modelers, tube amps, experiencing an amp, how the audience hears an amp. I think there's only two types. I'm going to say there's two types of guitar tones. And it's an important distinction here because I think we as players get away from this. We don't realize how important it is. The two types of guitar tones, I think that there really are. Everything falls into these categories. You ready? I think it's captured and not captured. AHW, come on, what are you talking about? You're talking about there's only profiles and not profiles? There's only things the Kemper captured and didn't capture? No. I mean there's only sounds that you're hearing captured through microphones and sounds you're hearing not captured through those microphones. There's really only you listening to the source of an amp and you listening to the source of an amp that was captured and amplified at you. So what does it mean to be captured? I think that's any live recording. I think that's any studio recording. I think that's any YouTube demo, even if it's being captured through an iPhone. I think that's any, it's anywhere you're hearing music that you're not sitting there hearing the actual amplifier. So it's really anywhere but your bedroom. It's all the tones you're used to. If you want to sound like Hendrix, well, you'd have to, I think, if you really, really want to capture Hendrix's sound. You know, there's a guy online on YouTube named Solo Dallas. And Solo Dallas is a guy who's really really into Angus Young. And he's a really great player. He can play all the AC/DC stuff and all this Angus Young stuff really great. And he actually created a Schaefer replica pedal that models the Schaefer sort of pedal or the Schaefer box that that Angus was using, and that was sort of part of the Angus tone that he felt like was missing. But you know, I think it's important to notice that if you're trying to nail a tone from a recorded guitar track, you're going after a tone that's been EQ'd. You're going after a tone that's been compressed. Let me explain something to you if you don't know this. When you're recording a guitar, everything's going through a compressor at the end somewhere. Producers are bouncing stuff to tape. If it's an old, if it's an old recording, it was on tape. Later, when we first started using digital, it was very common to bounce stuff to tape. Now, no one really does that. We bounce stuff to maybe a tape emulation, or maybe we send that out to an 1176 or an LA, what is it, LA 2As, LA 216s, LA 16s. You know, it's common to sidechain compress stuff, to put EQs on an entire track, to put reverbs on an entire track, to take a guitar track and really manipulate it and really go, I want to thin that out so that it really only sits where I want it. These are all things that drastically affect the perception of a guitar in a mix. And when you're listening to that mix and trying to solo out a guitar and get that tone, it's all stuff that has to be in the equation. They're mics, they're preamps, they're effects. They're just as much effects as ones you put in front of your amp are the ones they put after the amp. In fact, sometimes I would make the case they are even more important because they fall later in the signal chain, which in general, variables in an equation tend to have more effect on the outcome, on the sum, on the result, on the product, the later they fall in the equation. Take that if you'd like, and you could experiment with that, and you could put, if you want to see, put reverb in front of your chain and put it at the very end of your chain, put a very light reverb in the front and the end of your chain, and then run it the same, put an EQ in the very front or the very end of your chain, boost the treble first thing before you go into a compressor, a drive, a delay, and reverb. You'll notice your guitar is just slightly brighter. Do that same EQ boost with a Boss GE7 or something at the end of your signal chain, you will notice instantly it is way brighter, way harsher, way more susceptible to sort of runaway frequencies and being an outlandish, exaggerated characteristic of what brightness you're trying to dial in. It's because equations, variables tend to have more effect on equations as they fall later in the equation. They're less affected by other variables. That's the rub there. Okay, jumping back. There are recorded sounds and not recorded sounds. Recorded and not recorded sounds. And I think it's important because lately I've really been trying to figure out how do I get the... If the Kemper can do it all, the question has come up, well, I just, when I'm in the room, I want it to sound like I'm in the room with the amp. And this question really got at me because I think at this point I'm someone who has transitioned from even desiring that the amp, that the Kemper would sound like an amp in the room. I'm very used to how it sounds now. I'm very used to how I run it in my house. I don't listen to an amp in the room and I don't hear a lot of characteristics there that I'm missing. I hear how it's different. I hear what it's bringing to the table, but I'm not longing for that. When I hear it, I go, that sounds like an amp in the room. I like it. It sounds good. But I don't go, oh man, well, how do I replicate this? This would be better than what I have. And what really threw me off was I thought a lot of people in the Kemper world were getting there, or at least shared that sort of opinion too. But then the Sues bought a Line 6 power cab, and it really threw me off because he hadn't talked about it much. And I thought, well, why did you buy that? Sues, why'd you buy that? He said, I wanted to check it out, and I really want something that sounds more like the amp in the room. Now, this is very confusing to me, because the Sues' amp, I mean, for a guy who says he wants it to sound like the amps in the room, you'd think he might occasionally play an amp in the room. The Sues' amp has been at my house for, I don't know, 7-8 months now? I mean, I think we've turned it on twice. You know what I mean? It's not like he's over every day. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm over at HW's house every day. I might as well leave my amp here. No. We get together a lot, but it's not always at my house. And in fact, we're usually around Kemper's when we do. So I thought, I didn't even perceive that you at all viewed the amp in the room as having value so much that you would go seek it out or spending or begin to spend money to make your Kemper more like that. And so we tried the power cab, and we liked the power cab. we both thought, which was surprising to me because behind the scenes, you know, I have a lot of times said people if they ask me, HW, what's the best FR out there? And I will say, look, I haven't tried them all, but I really like this FR. It's the one I use. I'm really having a good experience with it. But there could be other things out there that would just floor me and I haven't discovered them yet. So I've seen a lot of people buy FRs, and sometimes they get rid of them. Sometimes they love them. I've seen people buy the Freedman. Sometimes they get rid of them. Sometimes they love them. But the Seuss has often told me he prefers his studio monitors, I think, to my Freedman ASM12. We're both used to our own listening environments, right? You get used to your own listening environment. And so, and I like mine more, right? We're just both used to it more. So it was confusing to me. I thought he was very happy. So he goes out and gets this cab. What was interesting was in FRFR mode, I touched on this a little bit in a previous podcast, I think. In FRFR mode, we both preferred the Freedman ASM12. We thought it was a little bit larger, a little bit bigger. And maybe it was just because the cab was a little bigger. The Freedman ASM12 is like a wedge-type monitor. They make it in a guitar-type cab as well. It is larger. And so to us, it sounded a little bit fuller in the bass, and it sounded to have a little bit more high end, sort of, I would say, a little more brightness. It's that brightness both extends into what I would say is FR frequency, that is a little bit more high end than you'd find in a guitar cabinet, but also some brightness that you would find in a guitar cabinet. I found it just be a little bit more bright and lively. But to be fair, I think the Line 6 Power Cab might be a better buy because it's more portable, it's lighter. The Power Cab was 30 pounds compared to the ASM12, which was 50 pounds. This was very heavy. And the Line 6 Power Cab is like a little 112 you can carry around anywhere. So some of that fullness just came from size and stuff. Anyway, the Seuss goes out and gets this. We think in FRFR mode, I slightly prefer the Freedman, but not enough to justify switching, you know, just slightly. They both sounded very close to each other, so close that I don't think you can make the argument that one sounds more accurate than the other or something like that. It's just every speaker is going to have a characteristic. Every box is going to have a characteristic. Every placement is going to have a characteristic. You know, we had them sitting next to each other, but one was on the left, one was on the right. Does that make enough of a difference that we were hearing it? Possibly, from where we were standing. And the Seuss might have heard something slightly different than where I was, because we were standing within 2 feet of each other, but still different spots. But we tried the Power Cab in these sort of speaker modeling modes, where you can get a blue or a greenback or a Jensen. And it sounded great. I think it sounded like an amp in the room. It really did. I mean, it sounded like a speaker was in the room. Did it sound like that real amp plugged into a real greenback? Well, I don't know. You know, we were using studio profiles and we defeated the cab. So did the Kemper do that accurately? I guess it probably did a good job. Did it do 100%? Probably not. Did the Line 6 greenback sound 100% exactly like a greenback sitting there? I don't know. But it sounded like an amp was in the room. You could instantly hear the difference. And my brain told me, oh, that sounds like an amp. Sounds like an amp is sitting right there. It doesn't sound like it got rid of some of the extended high end. And sounded like a greenback. And then we switched to a blue. And I thought, yep, that sounds like a blue. That's what changing to a blue sounds like. Which I feel like. And then we tried, you know, the AC30 that we did with greenbacks and the AC30 that we did with blues and compared it. It did a similar thing. You know, of course, there were some differences in the EQ. Their blue sounded a little bit, you know, our AC30 captured with a blue, with the cab sim turned off, sounded different, you know, running through their version of a blue than it did through our captured version of a blue. But it sounded similar. I feel like all those words I just said were confusing to follow. Their capture through a blue, my capture through blue. You know what I'm saying? It was an interesting experience because I enjoyed it, but I was surprised that he wanted that. So I've been giving this a lot of thought lately and just kind of going, I guess people really want the sound of an amp in the room, but my question is why? So then I went and bought, naturally, I did the next thing that comes logically. I said, well, everyone wants, you know, this amp in the room stuff. So, okay, I guess I should start doing direct profiles and I should get a powered Kemper and see what this is about. So you'll notice that the latest pack from Tone Junkie, the Dairy Boy, Dairy Boy Creme Plus, which includes the Milkman Creamer profiles and the Milkman 5-watt profiles. They have direct profiles now, and that's really good, I think, because I started using those direct profiles then into my aux and tested them out, and they sounded great. And I have a powered Kemper on the way, which means, podcast listeners, I'm just going to throw this out there, I will be selling a Tone Junkie, an official Tone Junkie Kemper. No, it's because I have probably one too many Kempers now. I don't really need three Kempers, especially when the Suze has access to six of them through his church. His church owns six. And then John Tu's been talking about getting a Kemper. I don't need three Kempers. Oh, I should sell him a Kemper. Well, that could be good. Maybe I'll do that. Okay, but if you're listening and you are in the market for a Kemper, I probably will be selling an unpowered Kemper, a bag, and a remote bundle with all the Tone Junkie profiles, because why not? And I don't know, I'll put that up on the group or something. I'll put it on Reverb. But you can message me if you'd like to talk about that. I'd love it to go to someone who is like maybe listening to the podcast and really wants a Kemper, and you know, I could throw a t-shirt in the bag and stuff. You know, just keep it in the fam sort of thing. But anyway, I've gone to a powered Kemper. Or at least I've gone, one of my Kempers is going to be powered. And I'm going to be trying it. What's going to be fun is I'm going to try it through my same cab that I've made a lot of profiles with, my favorite cab. And I have my cab with Blues and the cab with V30s and the Matchless cab. There's a ton of cabs that we have here. But it's going to be interesting to see that. But I it has me wondering this. Okay, if I start enjoying this at home, and I start going, okay, I like this amp in the room thing. Why? Like, why do I like it? It has some quality about it. Is it really better, or am I more used to it? And now that I'm more used to the other way, I'm more used to the Kemper through an ASM12, through an FR-FR speaker, am I going to enjoy the powered Kemper through a cab more? Is that really what I'm looking for? Am I going to want to have that different experience at home? Will I go back the other way? And then that has me going, if I do go back the other way, am I moving forward or am I moving backwards? Is it worth it for me to have a sort of, you know, a sound that I want to have at home and then another sound I want to have at church or live? And that brings me back to the point of captured and non-captured guitar sounds. You know, it's the changes in variables was one of the things I thought was most valuable about the Kemper. The way that you experience an amp in a room is different. There's variables missing from how an audience experiences an amp on a recording or in a live environment. And so one of the things I've always thought was really great about the Kemper was the elimination of those equations. But it's not lost on me that the player experience and how that affects, inspiration. Because I have a lot of gear that I just keep around for inspiration, you know. I keep around my Gold Strat because it's inspiring to play. You play differently on that guitar. You hear something differently in the music that makes you choose a different chord. Sorry, my son was alerting me. There's a large bug behind me. It makes you choose different tonality, right? Maybe the chime of a Strat and the sort of brightness in a Strat, the squawkiness, it makes double stops more appealing, right? That's why the blues is full of double stops. That's why those bright things, those bright tonalities make it a lot clearer to hear a seventh chord or a sixth or a diminished chord. Well, maybe not a diminished chord, but maybe a diminished chord. But that's why you see those things coming about in styles of music that prefer a brighter sound. You can hear a single high seven on there very, very clearly. At least that's how I think. That's at least an example of the tonality of the guitar sort of affecting. Sorry. That's at least an example of the tonality of a guitar affecting a style of music. You know what I mean? At least that's what I think here. Well, my little guys have joined me out here for I guess, the remainder of the podcast. I was on the quiet porch, and now they decided to play tag outside. And I'm just going to finish my thoughts on recorded or and uncaptured and captured sounds. I think it begs the question, you know, my buddy Tim Hereabout. Hereaboot? I don't know. He's Canadian. I never really know how to say it. But Tim, he's got a YouTube channel, and you should look him up. I will, I'll share one of his videos or something on Facebook. You can find it there. But he's been trying to compare this. He just did two videos on amp in the room tone, and because it's part of the conversation right now. You know, we're both in this Facebook group, and that's where the conversation seems to go. This amp in the room. How do we get this and that? And it's an interesting discussion because it's. We want the Kemper because it does these things, and in some level, the Kemper is promising sort of every amp in one package. That's kind of what it's morphed into. I'm not sure that that's the original sort of promise of the Kemper. I think the original promise is profile your own amp, but that's morphed into something in the profiling world. It means have a great version, you know, of a really well captured amp, have a great version of that that matchless amp, have a great version of that Bad Cat amp, you know, have the captured tone as you can deliver it to an audience. But I don't think it's delivering have every amp at once as an amp in the room tone. And so, but then the more I think about it, the more I go, you know. The tests online, the ones that first fooled Rob Chapman, and the ones... See, the test to me that's the most impressive for the Kemper is the one where Rob Chapman can't identify the Red Dwarf amp, his signature amp. Hey, guys, stay out of the street. Hey, Leo, mind the street. Mind the street, you heard? Anyway, sorry. My kids were getting close to the street. No, you can't see if Hudson wants to play. It's like 7 in the morning. You can't go to people's house yet. Uh-uh. Hey, guys, come back over here. No, it's not 7 in the morning. It's actually later. Okay, anyway. Back to the podcast here. You know... It's the type of thing where I go, well, if that makes sense, it makes sense to say this statement. The Kemper might actually be more accurate with direct profiles through a speaker if that same speaker is the one you're trying to capture. Like, I actually believe I can tell the difference between a profile and a real amp in the room. Everybody can. If I set up my FR and my Kemper and then a real amp, you'd be able to hear the difference, right? One has the microphones and one doesn't. But if I'm sitting in the studio, I can usually pick out which is the Kemper profile and which is the real amp. It's very subtle, but there's a little bit of change. It's very, and it kind of, the Kemper's doing the kind of the same thing every time. You know, it's the type of thing where if I've picked up on the little thing that it changed, if I picked up on a little frequency that's being cut out, a little notch that it put in somewhere, then, you know, you can really tell which is which. Not really tell, but in an A-B test, you can hear, wait, this one sounds, I'm picking up a little bit of difference there. And then if you know which is the Kemper, you'll begin to hear it. You'll be able to go, oh, yeah, I hear the slight difference there. But if you put it through the same speaker, I mean, that's a huge filter. You know, cabs... and stuff are a huge, huge filter. And like we said earlier, because they come later in the signal chain, they're more powerful. They really are more powerful, and they really can be some of the most powerful tonal shapers, you know? If you want to see that, I mean, look at a Tone Junkie pack that has blues and greenbacks. Look at any of the matchless packs that have the H speaker and the M speaker. You hear a big difference. there's more high end in that H speaker than the M speaker. There's more mid range in that M speaker than in the H speaker. There's all of it together, sort of blended together in the HM profiles. That's why I do those, and that's why Matchless puts those two speakers in there. They're looking for that tonality to be in their cabs, and it's not achievable with one speaker. It's really not. There's not a speaker out there that sounds like an M and an H mixed together. The M and the H, by the way, that I'm referring to are the two types of greenbacks. It's the small cap, it's the small greenback and the big greenback, often referred to as the classic greenback. The one that we really call the greenback today is the G12 M25 or 25M. That's the classic greenback speaker. That's the one everyone calls a greenback. But what the one that we call the H30, the 70th anniversary G12 H30 speaker, that actually had a greenback also at first, and that was actually a greenback speaker also, and it's kind of now sometimes referred to as in quotes greenback, because it's become popular. The other one's kind of the classic one, but anyway, that speaker is still in production, it's still being made, and actually I believe the English made version of that H30 is a greenback, and I think, what do they call it, the H, yeah, greenback H or something, or eight, it's designated with an H, but it's a 75 hertz model. If you put both of those together, I don't think you'd be able to tell the difference. So I think it might be that the most accurate reproduction of an amp that the Kemper can do is a direct profile. But what's it worth? Do I want to hear something different? There's already the variable of I'm in my room and I can hear my room, right? Unless you've accounted for that and you've maybe treated the room, you're getting more accurate. There's already the variable of, well, how are these monitors coloring the sound? How is this cab coloring the sound? There's already the variable of how does my PA color the sound? We're getting these variables so much smaller than when we used to just carry in an amp and pedals and stick an SM57 in front of it. We're getting so much closer. But now the conversation is going, do I want to experience something different at home? And I think the answer is maybe, sometimes. I don't know. I'm really excited, but I think it's worth noting that for me, I look at there being two sounds. There's that amp as I intend to put it out to the audience. There's this tone that I intend people to hear, and there's this tone that I'm hearing in all my recordings, and then there's a separate experience that's happening at home. And in the act of trying to translate my experience of what I have at home being an amp in the room tone, in the act of trying to translate that to a sound that people will actually hear, that's where I just don't think an amplifier does a good job. And so that's where I go, well, for me, practically, what might I do? I have a performance file that I'm still working on that I will put out, I promise. I've had a lot of requests for it. HW, what do you play on Sunday morning? Here's the thing. I'm playing an AC30. I'm still using the old Tone Junkie AC30 pack because, my gosh, it just works. It just works so well. I'm so used to it with the JM Pro. I have my go-to performance. I'm honestly afraid if I put it out, it's so dialed in for the JM Pro that people are going to be like, oh, it's too bright, it's too dark. But for me, it's just perfect. It just works. But I'm going to put that out. But I have, and I hardly change that. I almost make no changes on Sunday mornings. Sometimes I might go, I don't need the trem this week, so I'm going to assign a chorus in there instead. Or I'm going to take out that chorus. I'm going to add a phaser for this little part or something, you know, for just to add it on my you know, sort of swell patch or something. But you know, it's 95% the same every week, and it's because I have just some sounds dialed in. I know where everything is. I probably use less sounds than a lot of people, I think. I don't tend to change. I mean, I have like four core sounds, you know, and so I'm really not matching it to every song, every intro. It's like, here's the four sounds, and I can add some delays. I can take some away. I can add a trem to this one or that one or do something like that if I want. But it's really just these four sounds, and one's a swell, so it's really three sounds. But, you know, I don't know. I'm in the air. I'm in the air on whether amp in the room is something is worth chasing or not, you know? Or if I just go with the opinion of like, no, amp in the room is not as good. Amp in the room is like riding a horse. right? No, that doesn't make sense.
I love when I'm about to make up a metaphor on the spot and it doesn't come out. Anyway, is it worth chasing? I'm just not sure.
I'm just not sure. But I think it's the act of the chase that makes me a tone junkie. It's loving the chase of it rather than loving the destination. Tone isn't a destination, it's a journey. A lot of things in life are not destinations, they're journeys. A whole lot of things. And I found that if you only love the destination, if you're constantly focused on the destination only, it can lead to a lot of things. It'll lead to you being down, depressed, bummed when things aren't, when you're not getting there, when you're not there. And really, if you want to enjoy life, you got to enjoy the journey, getting to the places you want to be. That's really when you win. And I enjoy chasing this stuff. So I'm not even sure if this is a place I want to go to, a place I want to be. I don't even know if I want to be getting amp in the room tone in my house anymore. Because I'm selling my amps. You know, there's been some amps I'm keeping around. And I realized the other day, I haven't played this Cirbella in 6 months. I haven't even turned it on. I turned it on, it sounded great, and I just thought, I don't want to get my pedal board out. I'm just going to plug my Kemper in. Plug my Kemper in, play the Cirbella profile, sounded great, loved it. Plugged it in, played some other profile, sounded great, loved it. And I just thought, like, I'm going to sell this amp now. So I did. I sold the Cirbella. Yeah, I got a sweet deal on it. Sweet deal. There's a guy I've sold some other stuff to. He made me an offer. He said, hey, HW, it's me, blah, blah, blah. He's a customer and a fan, and he knows the Sioux and everything. And he kind of lowballed me. And I said, well, that lowball's a little low, but here, add a little bit more to it, and you can get it at a price that's pretty much below market. Why not? And so he got it. I'm going to sell my AC30 next. The AC30 has one more task, and that's this. I got the Edge 5E3 signature amp, and I'm going to do a dual profile with the AC30 with it. And then the AC30 has done its thing. The AC30, that particular AC30 is probably one of the most profiled amps anywhere because it's appeared in its own Tone Junkie pack, a very extensive Tone Junkie pack, a pack that I think is, for me, the Tone Junkie AC30 pack is the definitive 6-input AC30 sound. That's what every tone in that amp is there. It's not the vintage AC30, it's the 96-input one. And there's not a tone in that amp that isn't in there. And that's what those amps sound like. They're mid-rangey, they're bright. God, they cut through a mix like a knife. They're beautiful. They really do the job. I understand actually why that pack doesn't get as much love as the Matchless stuff. The Matchless Chieftain, the Matchless Clubman and everything. If you ask me, play one amp live from the Matchless line, I'd probably choose the Clubman. And I'd say the Clubman only for this reason. The C30 has it going on too. But that EF86 just sounds right. In a mix, though, that mid-range is just correct, man. It's just right. But the AC30 with the blues or with the greenbacks, I kind of prefer that amp with the greenbacks because it has so much chime and mid-range already that I think the blues, depending on the guitar, can be a little much. But depending on the guitar, the blues can also be the right choice. That is one of my favorite all-time packs, and that amp is just made for a mix. There's a reason. Those 6-input 90s AC30s. There's a reason that even though Korg made that amp and it breaks all the time and it's not a roadworthy design the way it's put together inside, there's too much rat. The way the tubes are seated in there and everything, when you try to travel with it, you put it in a car, it rattles too much. There's too much stress on the tubes and the components. And so you get all this rattling, and especially when it's hot, it can, that rattling and vibration and stuff, and it rattles too much when you play it. There's too much vibration in the cabinet. It's just not constructed well. Like the circuit's in there, and the circuit's different than how it's constructed, right? The circuit is an AC30 circuit, and it's great. What they didn't do a good job of is trying to construct the box and everything in a way that really minimizes that stuff. And so when you're playing, you can blow tubes, and I believe, and I've heard people say this, it's because there's so much more rattling and vibration in that amp that you're blowing tubes more often because the filament will get soft, and if the circumstances are right, there's enough vibration that you'll break the filament. And that's what's blowing the power tube. So, all that to say, that AC30 is going, because I'm at the point where I'm going, I don't play this thing. It's been dual amp profiled with everything I own, right? An AC30 and this is always the bet. And so it's like, do I need this anymore? I don't think I do. I think we've covered the AC30 and we've covered the AC30 with other stuff, especially because we've got the AC30 with the JTM45 coming out. We've got the AC30 with the Kundi amp with the Bad Cat Luca. We've got you know, and then we've got it. We're gonna have it with the 5E3. So that dual pack is gonna be AC30 and Luca and Twin and 5E3 and all these amps sort of in a blender mixing together, and it's gonna be great. It's gonna be beautiful. But I think the AC30 has run its course for me. I think we've gotten out of it what we need to get out of it. And I love that amp, and I thought about keeping it around, but I just don't play it. And that has me going, I have access to amps in the room, but I'm not using them. Am I going to use the powered Kemper? I don't know. We're going to find out. All that and more on future episodes of the Tone Junkie Podcast. Now, why on earth would HW say that he wishes he had one guitar? That seems to go against everything HW is. So why would HW say that one guitar is better than eight guitars? How is one better than eight? What is this new, some weird new Tone Junkie math? Is that Common Core stuff? That Common Core math? You can't change math. No, it's not Common Core math. I mean, it might be. I don't know. I'm not studying Common Core math. And my oldest is only in kindergarten. So we'll see when we get there. But, how could one be better than eight? One is not greater than eight. It is not. Eight is one eight times. So shouldn't it be eight times better? You know, there's a saying, be careful of the man who has one gun, because he probably knows how to use it. I think that's true. I think that is really true of guitars. I notice in my own playing that there are certain things that I decide not to do. I often tell myself, well, I could play a Tele for the whole set. I know people do that. But I want a Trem, right? I could tell myself, I don't really play three pickup Strats. I just don't really like to take them out because I feel like I need more in the bridge. But necessity is the mother of invention, is it not? And so when my option is, well, this song really requires me to switch guitars, or this song requires that I play this, I need a humbucker for this guitar. What if I didn't have the option? What if I needed to get a heavier tone or a tone appropriate for a song, and all I had was that three pickup Strat? What would I do to solve that problem? And would the act of solving that problem bring me somewhere that could be better, or maybe this, more unique? Would the act of trying to solve that problem develop for me a more signature sound, a signature approach? I think we see so often, if you look back, you talk to, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan had this interview one time where he talked about, they said, you know, why did you choose the Tube Screamer? It's been such an instrumental part of your sound, your gear. They asked him to talk about his gear. And they said, tell us about the pedal. And like a lot of these stories that you hear, he points out that, well, that was all we had, right? I mean, the guy's like trying to play guitar in the late 70s, and, you know, there's like four overdrive pedals like on the market. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of stuff. And he literally said, he's like, well, where we were, this was the only pedal like that we had. We didn't really know about other pedals. Like that I guess we knew there were some other pedals, but we did. This is the one we could buy. And so he buys that, and that's it. He doesn't go, oh, I hear the sound in my head and I want to sculpt it. And he goes and finds the perfect overdrive. No. He has a Vibralux on 10 or a Deluxe on 10. He's got a Twin on 10. You know, he didn't have a Twin on 10. Mostly it's a Vibralux, I believe. Vibraverb, maybe? No, Vaughn played a Vibralux. A Super, and then for a while he played a Vibralux. Anyway, he has a Fender amp on 10, and the question is, well, how do I get more mid-range out of it? Or how do I get more out of it? Where do I go? Well, here's a Tube Screamer. I'm going to go there. It wasn't until later in the 80s and really the early 90s and stuff that you start seeing a lot more pedals come on the market. You start seeing big brands like Marshall and stuff go, oh, we're going to make a pedal. We're going to make the Boss Blue or the Marshall Bluesbreaker. You know, it's in the 80s, the mid 80s that you see Boss come out, and Japan really goes, oh, guitar. We like guitar. We're going to make and do guitar stuff. And it's interesting. I'm watching a truck go by me now. I'm still on my porch. They're still building a section of my neighborhood, and that truck's not supposed to go down here. He's really not, but okay. Whatever. You can't get mad at this stuff. You really can't. It robs you of your peace. Takes your joy. Not gonna let it. Not going to let it, even though they keep dropping debris in the street in front of my house. And even though they've told us several times that the construction trucks are not going to come through this part of the neighborhood because they have an entrance and exit on the other end of the neighborhood. So why on earth do they even drive out of their way to come all the way over here? I have no idea. I am now venting on the Tone Junkie podcast. My apologies. But necessity is the mother of invention, right? And so you end up with solutions. In trying to solve the problem, you end up with solutions that maybe have other benefits or other effects, other sort of, you know, things. Is this another one? Ah, gosh, these guys. They're not even working close to over here. Okay, I gotta go make a complaint to the HOA now. This is grumpy HW you're getting now. Anyway, well, just yesterday they blocked the street. They came and paved the road again because there were mistakes the first time, and they blocked the street. We couldn't get to the house. I thought, what's this going on? There was no notice. I go down there and complain, and they tell me some guy named Jake was supposed to give notice, and Jake admitted he didn't. And then they told me they were going to put Jake in a headlock and laughed. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Who is Jake? I don't care who Jake is. Jake was supposed to put a notice in my mailbox that we're not going to be able to get to our house, that we have to park blocks away and walk to our house for what, an entire day? Jake? Come on, Jake. Shape up or ship out, Jake. I ain't got time for this. All right. Jake, if you're listening to the Tone Junkie podcast, stop listening and go get some notices and mailboxes when you're going to inconvenience people. This is truly the angriest episode now of the Tone Junkie podcast. Listen, back to Tube Screamers, okay? Tube Screamers here. It's just, oh gosh, listen, if you ever build a house, I'll tell you this, don't build it with Pulte. Don't ever build a house with Pulte. Pulte, Del Webb, or Centrix. They're the nation's largest home builders, and they're the worst people to deal with. And I'll tell you why. It's because they treat their employees terrible, and because they don't pay that well. And so the turnover is atrocious. They keep turning people over. And so the person you talked to 3 months ago is not the person who you're working with today. And when it takes you 8 or 9 months to build a home, that's a lot of turnover. And then warranty people and everything. I don't know. It's just how it is. Anyway, it's a really cool thing in the neighborhood happening right now, I'll just tell you, in the Tone Junkie neighborhood. I don't know if you can hear this in the background, but I live in sort of this little circle. It's not really a cul-de-sac. It's more like the road goes and then splits into two. And then it's sort of, it like does a Y and splits into two. And in the center of these two roads is a large green space with trees and everything. So everyone's front porch faces these trees and this green space and everything. But you know, it's not so dense or crowded or something that you can't see through to the other house across the street. I'll take a picture. I'll make it I'll put it online or something. No, I won't. I don't know if I'll do that. Yes, I will. I'll do that. For a second, I just thought it would be weird if I'm going to like take pictures of my neighbor's homes, but whatever. And now I'm noticing I'm out here doing a podcast. I see a lady across the way she's on a phone call. I see a guy out here. He's taking a business call. And if I'm quiet, I can hear what they're saying. It's sort of, you can hear everything. Anyway, back to the Tube Screamer, finally. We need to get back on track here on the Tone Junkie podcast. We've been really distracted here. It's the type of thing where if it's necessity is the mother of invention, you know? You've got to understand that in trying to solve a problem, you sometimes come up with really the solution to another problem or a design that is superior. You know what I'm saying? And so that one gun idea, that one, what if I had to play a three pickup Strat all the time? Like, what if that was the law? What if we had some, what if, I was going to say, what if Gibson owned the government? What if Fender ruled the world and Gibson was like the rebel alliance? I mean, then the rebels would hold no chance at all, because Gibson would be making blasters that just malfunction and don't stay in tune. Anyway, you know, what if you had to just play a Strat? What if that was your only guitar? It's funny, a guy came over, Morgan came over, and he brought his really great Two Rock, and it was really nice seeing a guy who was really committed to this Strat. It's funny, he's recently messaged me and said, oh, I don't know about this Strat, I'm thinking about getting a Sur now. but he had a really nice Strat. He had put an Emerson wiring kit in it, and he had put some pickups that were kind of modeled after the Black One pickups, John Mayer's Black One pickups. And they were low output Strat pickups. And the thing is, he had great tone. The guy had killer tone. When he plugged his guitar into his Two Rock Bloomfield drive, which is the next pack coming out for Tone Junkie, it's the Two Rock, it's going to be called the Two Stone Bloomer, I guess. Something like that. Bloomers. Bloomer. Put your bloomers on. I don't know. Bloomery. The Bloomery. Is that a pedal name already? The Bloomery? I don't know. He had great tone. He had killer tone. And then when he turned his delays and his reverbs on, it only confirmed again for me that the only difference between any other genre tone and praise and worship tone is just delays and verbs. I mean, really, if you turn the delays and verb off, you can instantly play other types of music. No one would think it's out of place. It's not like we use a special type of gain or something. It's not like we use a special type of overdrive. You know, we're not jazz players. We're not metal guys. It's guitar into amp with a couple effects on in between. The guitars and the amp sound the way they do. We didn't author this tone. We just made it repeat a bunch of times and made it sound like it was in a large cave. That's praise and worship guitar. But, you know, you go back and you think, what if I just had the one guitar and the one amp? What would I do with it? And in some ways, I feel like I do that with the JM Pro. I kind of have limited myself to that guitar in a lot of ways, and it's not that I can't play it. I have a great telly, and the thing is, if I start playing that telly a bunch, I'll get to know it better again, and I'll remember, oh yeah, this nuance and that nuance and stuff. But I really love the way I just know with my JM Pro, because I'm so familiar with it. I know when I'm playing live, and we play a lot of new songs live. There's a lot of songwriters at my church, and we try a lot of new songs live, and because these guys are songwriters, they might write a song and they're trying to figure out if it works or not before they turn it into a publisher, before the publisher goes and shops it around. So we've seen songs that for us are just pulled out and sort of just, hey, let's try this. And, you know, you might just have an acoustic guitar and a vocal. You might have literally the demo they made that day. You might have another construction truck feels the need to go by and not use the construction entrance. Just really polite of them. Really. And now he's going to stop in front of the house and interrupt the Tone Junkie podcast. How dare you, sir? How dare you? He's continued on now. It could have been my smug look from the porch, but I mean, it didn't hurt, but I don't want to say it was all the smug look, but it didn't hurt. I'm familiar with the neck of the JM Pro. I know what happens when I throw it on the neck and I play soft with my fingers, and I get this very sort of darker, you know, moody sort of tone. And that can be a really great verse two kind of thing when I'm trying to throw in, you know, a little like line to go underneath the vocal. And sort of throw in something there, right? The verse two, the second verse curse. You know, how are you gonna spice up this verse two a little bit? I might do something like that. I might on the bridge, right? I know what that's going to do on, for a lead. I know what that's going to do. I'm just familiar with that guitar. I know in the middle that the most clarity I'm going to get on that guitar is in the middle, and the most sort of biting mid-range is at the bridge. And one of the things I like about the guitar is the bridge is not overly bright, but the middle has a ton of clarity. The neck has a ton, has some clarity, but it's got warmth as well. I know that guitar. I know how it's going to sound before it sounds. Do you know what I mean? Do you know? And I feel like that's a characteristic of when you really know one guitar really well. I don't mean like, oh yeah, I know a guitar, how it sounds in the number two position of a Strat. I mean, I know how it's going to sound if I play with my fingers up near the neck pickup on the number two position, and I already hear in my head that's the sound I want for this little, like, for a double stop or for just a little triad that I'm going to put in on a verse two that I didn't, where I was out on verse one, right? I just know, you know, or I know how it's going to sound if I put a little trem on there and I play really close to the bridge on my neck pickup. See, those are the little tricks that you learn when you have just one guitar. When you're jumping around so much, it's harder to get sort of deeper with the instrument, with the tonality of the instrument. By the way, that's a cool sound, by the way. Throw your guitar on the neck pickup and hit right on the bridge. You get a steely sound, but it's not as harsh as the bridge pickup. And so it's kind of a warmer steely sound, I find. And with a bright enough thing, it can really be a nice way to... it's a nice tonality, and if you do that with a pick, you can get some nice stuff out of it. Especially, I like to turn on a trem sometimes, put it on the neck pickup, and pick really close, just a little like maybe an arpeggio or something, really close to the bridge, and with a trem on, kind of a slow trem, and you get an interesting sound that I don't think I don't hear all the time. Anyways, cool thing. Tone junkie tip of the day. You know. That's the kind of thing you can really learn on a single guitar. And so when I see guys with one guitar, when I saw Morgan, and he was like, this is my Strat, and it's an American Strat, and here's all the things I did to it. See, I knew he knew that guitar before, then he knew the guitar after he changed the pickups, then he knew the guitar after he changed the pots and the wiring. He knew the guitar. And where I would maybe look at that guitar and go, oh, I wish there was a humbucker in the back. Why does there have to be? See, I didn't hear once Morgan go, oh yeah, I'm not able to play this song because, you know, it's a Strat. So I just don't play that song. It's like, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen at all. He knows. He gets by. Kundi plays a Strat. A lot of guys play Tellys and they don't need a trem arm. I like to do swells with vibrato on it. I love to add a little kind of vibrato from the trem bar on some chords and stuff. I love it. I love doing that. I don't need to do that with a Tele. And in fact, I could, maybe if I was playing a Tele, I could get used to when it is in my playing that I would reach up, put the sort of the palm of my hand on the body, and I would actually bend the neck a little bit on the Tele, right? You get that warble by pushing the neck up and down. Good for the long-term stability of the guitar? I'm not sure, but it looks cool when you do it. You know what I'm saying? One guitar, man, it's got some advantages. It really does have some advantages. So, should I sell all eight? I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that because one of the things I really like is then getting another, like, well, this is a really fulfilling experience. And I think we don't do this enough. Sometimes because we have too many guitars, we tell ourselves we need a lot of variety. And that variety sometimes means you don't learn each guitar very well. But one of the things I've really been enjoying is I think I like my second JM. And the reason I'm hesitating to put TV Jones in it, I really want to put the TV Jones in it. It's just a question of, do I need one with SSVs now? You know what I'm saying? I want SSV humbuckers, I think, in a guitar now. And I have one. So do I mess with that one or do I, you know, I don't know. But the reason I'm enjoying my new Sir JM Pro, my gold one with the humbuckers as opposed to my blue one with the P90s, I'm enjoying it because I know the platform so well. It feels like my other guitar, but it feels a little bit like a different guitar. They're a little bit different. You know, every guitar feels a little bit different. Mine's been played more. This one feels very fresh. Very fresh. In fact, I can't even remember if I restrung it yet. So that might be a big difference. The strings are different. But it's, I am enjoying a platform that I know so much, and it feels like I put different pickups in my same guitar. And so now I'm exploring, well, I used to do this on this guitar. Now how does it sound with these pickups? Or, ooh, this sounds different. And so I'm enjoying getting to know a different set of pickups. I think advice I don't hear enough is this. Hey guys, I want another guitar. I really like my guitar. I'm looking for something a little bit different. Something a little bit different might be the same model guitar with different pickups. Something a little bit different, if you have a Tele that you love, might not be go buy a Gretsch. Although, I mean, a Gretsch is great. You might really love the Gretsch Sparkle Jet, I think, is still one of the best buys out there in terms of, I'll put a Sparkle Jet in terms of tonality and what it can do and put it in a worship environment up there with any guitar. Now, I personally am not in love with all the neck profiles they use. I just want a little different shape and stuff. But that's nothing against Gretsch. I enjoy playing those guitars. I think they sound phenomenal. They're just not my favorite to play. I enjoy the Fender style stuff more. I don't know why that is. Just a preference. But I've had two Sparkle Jets. They're great. I play Nate's Gretches and stuff, and John 2's Gretches. They're great. I had two. And I sold them because every time I reach for a guitar on the wall, I kept noticing I'm reaching for these JM Pros. And then every time when I want a Strat, it's like I'm reaching for Goldie or the Sir Strat. And I have the one Tele, which I really like. I'm not going to replace it. I'm not the biggest Tele player at the moment, but that was my number one guitar for several years when I was playing out and live. And it's a great guitar. But I think we don't recommend to people enough. Have you thought about the same guitar, but with just different pickups? Like, oh, do you really love that American Standard? Like, that American Standard Strat, that American Standard Tele is your favorite guitar? You should think about getting an American Standard Tele with, and then you should think about putting in, what if you put a TV Jones or a PAF in the neck? And then what if you put a Hot Rails in the bridge? Or what if you put two humbuckers in it? Or what if you put, you like that Tele? What if you got a Strat with the same neck profile? Or what if you got, I mean, that's recommended a lot, I guess, but what if you're like, I have this Tele, I want something different. What if you're like, okay, what if you go the Brent Mason approach? What if you go get another Tele, same one, have a pick guard made or buy it, have a mini humbucker put in the neck and a Strat pickup in the middle. And then you get your bridge on, and then just maybe a different Tele bridge, right? If you're playing a Japanese kind of like a mid-80s or 90s Japanese Tele, you've probably got a pretty bright 60s-sounding bridge pickup in there. So what if you put in a Nocaster or a Broadcaster pickup, kind of a darker, fuller Tele bridge pickup? That's still a Tele, but now it's darker and fuller. You might enjoy that change. And then you might enjoy, well, hey, look, now I got the two in the four position. I think I'm going to start being the lone voice in these threads online, that when people say, hey, I'm looking for another guitar, and it's like, oh, you got a Tele? Go with a Les Paul. Hey, you got a Tele? Go with a 335. Hey, I'm going to go, hey, you got a Tele and you love it? Go with another Tele that has completely different sounding pickups. Go with a Tele that has P90s now. You know what I mean? If you love a Tele, go get a Tele with two P90s. You're welcome. Like, if you love what a Tele, if you like a brass, if you have a Tele and you like the sound of brass saddles, and you know, like, oh, I just love that tone that Teles always have with the ashtray bridge, put P90s on that and listen to that tone with a P90, you're welcome. You are welcome. That's going to be your new favorite thing. And then you're going to play that P90 guitar so much you're going to love it. And then you're going to go, oh, this is so amazing. You're going to pick up the Tele and you're going to go, what? This feels funky now. But then you're going to play that Tele more and you're going to go, oh, yeah, I remember. You're going to go, oh, because you go like this. Oh, these P90s had everything that Tele's missing. It's got fullness and mid-range and punch, right? And you're going to play that. And then you're going to pick that other Tele up and you're going to go, where's the fullness, mid-range, and crunch or punch? But then you're going to go, oh, but I hear that, like, that extra spank. That's what the other one didn't have, that this one did. That's, I remember. That's why I love this Tele. So I'm going to start recommending that people buy more of the same guitars. In fact, that's my new thing. HW is going to start recommending more of the same guitars. Do you like that? Get more of the same. Did you enjoy that piece of pizza? Have another. Nobody says, did you enjoy that piece of pizza? It was the best pizza you ever had? Eat this salad. Yuck. That's why no one stays on diets. There's no calorie-free pizza or french fries. You invent that, you'll be a rich man, I'm telling you. I brought this up the other day on my personal Facebook. I said, when are we just going to invent the calorie-free fries, right? Listen, and I know what people are saying. HW, those are that's zucchini fries, or HW, that's that. Let me tell you something. I worked with this lady one time. I'm hardly offended. I'm not offended often. I have a very live and let live sort of laissez-faire libertarian view of the world. And I say libertarian in the real sense of the word, in that HW is actually like an anarcho-capitalist. But don't get me started. I shouldn't have even said that. Some of you are going to think I'm crazy now. No, I mean, I don't mean like I'm a Republican, how Republicans like to call themselves libertarians. No, I mean, I have never voted for a Democrat or a Republican. I enjoy the thought experiments that go along with authors like Milton Friedman, like his son David Friedman, who's a far more radical, he's really an anarchist, but he's an intellectual anarchist, right? He's a professor, and what he's doing is experimenting with thought. Going, what are the thoughts? Like, let's think about this. What could a world look like if this institution, this structure didn't exist? You know, what could that look like? And the answer is, you know, hey, let's walk through it, right? And a lot of times you come up with conclusions that me and a lot of more moderate thinking people come up with, which is, you know, some of these social and government institutions really do seem in practicality to be the best way to go about this, right? But it's fun. It's fun to go on this little thought experiment of do you need the government to build the roads? That doesn't necessarily mean I'm saying building the roads is an evil thing. It's just I'm enjoying the thought of going, what if society was structured differently? Why on earth have we gone on this tangent? I can't remember exactly, but I have a very laissez-faire attitude towards these things. And so this is it. I knew this woman for a while. I'm hardly offended ever. But I knew this woman who was a vegan. If you're a vegan listening to this podcast, please stop. No, I'm kidding. You can listen to the podcast. If you're a vegan listening to this podcast, no offense. But what was funny was, there was a guy in my work also who was a vegetarian. Now you're about to say, HW, vegans are not vegetarian. I know. But this guy was a vegetarian. He was only a vegetarian because his parents were vegetarian. He was raised vegetarian. He really didn't have a moral problem with meat. He just didn't grow up eating it. And this was the real difference between the two of them. This vegan lady constantly had to rub in everyone's face that she was eating something that wasn't an animal product. And she constantly would just – here's the thing. If you're a vegan, I respect that. But don't show up with vegan meatballs. That's not a thing. It's not a thing. It's a soy ball. It's a something else ball. A meatball is one of the most literal names we have for a food. This is meat in a circle, globe, in a sphere. It's a ball of meat. That's what this is. There's nothing. It's not a fancy name. It's not a caprese salad, right? What does that mean? I don't know. You got to know what that is. It's not affogato. What is that? Oh, it's coffee. I put some espresso on. I'm sorry. It's ice cream. I put some espresso on it. It's affogato. Did you say avocado? No, I said affogato. Maybe those words mean something literal in Italian. I just chose two Italian dishes there. But the point being, a meatball is quite literally a juvenile description of the food. It is a ball of meat. You cannot replace meat in a meatball and still have it be a meatball. This would constantly happen. She'd be like, do you want this? Check out this... what did she call it? This vegan cheese. Try this vegan cheese. I'd be like, what is it? Oh, it's this and that. Okay, well, I guess vegan cheese you can make cheese from other types of milk, I guess. The point is, she always had some food that wasn't the food, right? And we do potlucks. And I always felt like it was kind of unfair. I'd be like, I'm trying to bring stuff that everybody likes, and you're literally trying to bring stuff that nobody wants, right? Isn't that just true of every vegan in the office? We have a potluck, and I'm trying to like go, huh, hey, wait, what are you bringing? And what are you bringing? And I'm like taking that into consideration going, that, okay, you're bringing chicken wings, and you're bringing French fries? Well, I mean, I got to bring something that's like, okay, now I got to bring fruit, you know, because we got to have something like citrusy to cut through that fried flavor there, you know. Or I'll bring a dessert, or whatever you bring. You know, you take into consideration. No, she didn't do that. She straight up flew in the face of everybody. Was like, what are we doing? Oh, it's sandwich theme. So everyone bring like different cold cuts and breads and stuff and cheeses. Oh, that'll be cool. Okay, well, I'm gonna bring this veganaise, this vegan mayo, which I'm just like, one, that's not even a food. Like, that's a condiment. Nobody's just bringing ketchup. We're all bringing, like, chips and different meat cuts. Someone made meatballs. You know what I mean? Like, someone made a fruit salad, a potato salad. Someone else is bringing roast beef. Someone else got the ham. Another guy's bringing rolls. Like, what? The condiment? And really, it's like, What did you expect us to do with that? You're getting veganaise, and you think the rest of us, what, we're going to put that on our ham or roast beef sandwich? Is this some battle that you've won? We're now eating less animal product? We literally have, like, pieces of the dead animal, thinly sliced, cured, salted, on this piece of bread, and you're bringing veganaise. You contrast that with this other guy who was so funny. I often asked him, like, what's your favorite type of burger, like, since you don't eat meat, like, when we go out or something? And he'd just go, you know, I don't really eat burgers. And I go, what do you mean? And he'd be like, well, I grew up a vegetarian. I didn't become a vegetarian later. So he said, I'm used to eating in a way that where I just don't eat a lot of meat. He said, I eat a lot of rice and beans. Like, he would go to get Mexican food. He would get a quesadilla with rice and beans, guacamole, sour cream. He was a vegetarian, though. He could eat cheese where the vegan lady wasn't. Fun fact about the vegan lady, though, I'll tell you this. She was kind of selectively vegan. I mean, not selectively vegan, but she didn't always, like, boycott places that you would think she would. She actually would do this semi-often. She would go and protest in front of McDonald's with, like, her little vegan group. And she'd hold up signs like, meat is murder. And then when the protest was done, she would walk in and order fries because she said McDonald's had delicious French fries. And I'm kind of like, I understand that a potato is where a French fry comes from, but, I mean, isn't that supporting the meat is murder people? Isn't it? Okay, I don't know. But this guy gave me a new perspective. He kind of showed me, like, you know, he's like, HW, I don't try to replace meat. Like, I'm not used to a diet that has a bunch of meat, and so I need to go find a meat replacement. I'm not used to eating that way. So he would get bean burritos, quesadillas. He would get, occasionally he'd eat seafood. So it's really not the most fair comparison. But he just had such a more logical approach. He never showed up with vegan meatballs, you know? And I respect that. I respect the guy who doesn't show up with vegan meatballs. I respect the CrossFitter who doesn't tell you about it. I respect the overweight person who's been on a diet for 2 weeks who wants to tell you how much better they feel. Just keep that stuff to yourself. I'm sorry, does that sound jaded? Just keep that to yourself. Just quit telling everybody. I mean, I say that while I have a podcast where all I'm doing is talking. But why do I respect? I don't know. I respect the guy who doesn't show up with vegan meatballs. I'm not sure where the diet person came from. Maybe that's just a pent up thing. I need to explore that. Why do I feel that towards them? What is it? Interesting. Anyway, this has been a very babbling edition of the Tone Junkie podcast. I'm noticing that the more of these I do on my porch, the more sort of I have to look at and gets me distracted, and I think that's where my mind wanders. Thank you so much for listening to episode 14 of the Tone Junkie podcast. We're going to be back real soon. I've got another podcast episode coming up in just a couple days. All right. Thanks, y'all. Love you. Later. HW out.